This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. A warm welcome to Red Ice Radio. This is Henrik. Thank you for spending some of your time with us today. We always make it worth your while as we highlight research, theories, and explore ideas. And hopefully in the process of listening, you can learn something new and have something new to add to your perspective. RedIceCreations.com, that's the website. Go there for much more. Colin Andrews is best known for his research into the crop circle and UFO subjects since 1983. He provides the only continuity between the past crop circle research era and the present, along with his friend and colleague, Busty Taylor. Colin is the man who coined the term crop circle. Among his many accomplishments, he started the first research organization called Circles Phenomenon Research, or CPR, and he has written numerous books on the subject. In the final analysis, Andrews believes the phenomenon is challenging people to a higher level of consciousness. Stay with us today as we discuss government circles, crop circle messages, and 2012. Colin Andrews, it's excellent to have you with us here today on Red Ice Radio. How are you today?
I'm well, and it's a pleasure. Thank you, Henrik.
Good to have you with us. I've been wanting to have you with us here on the program for a long time, and obviously you've been involved in the crop circle phenomena, the research aspect, the area for a long time. You're even behind the word crop circle, actually. I mean, we can talk a little bit about that later too as well. But there are so many aspects to this this issue, and your research has led you into so many different avenues as well when it comes to this. And some of them I hope we can get to here today. One of the things I would like to begin to ask you a little bit about is I guess your book from 2009, Government Circles, been an aspect that I've been very interested in for a long time. It has to do with this difficult area, of course, of determining what is real, or, you know, it's all real, obviously, but what is man-made, what is not man-made when it comes to these crop circles, of course. Is there any way you can give us a little bit of an outline in terms of your research that went into just the book of the Government Circles, Colin?
Yes. Well, the Government Circles was really born out of the fact that the research and interviews, meetings, I guess is the real term, the right term, that I had with Nick Pope, who was the former head of the UFO project for the Ministry of Defense in Great Britain, an employee of the British government. I got to know Nick really quite well over a number of years. I was attending meetings when he was in his official capacity, and I was not only attempting to elicit data, information for my own research, but I was also acting as a handshake, you might say, an introduction to Nick Pope by and on behalf of Stephen Greer and other people here in the United States who were pursuing the disclosure project. And so there were, I was wearing really a couple of caps, you might say, and a couple of hats when I had those meetings. But what disappointed me, having met and liked and still do like Nick Pope as a person, I was disappointed when I first announced that I was stepping back for a few years from the front line, as you might say, particularly from the media interviews, and I was going to quietly be doing specific work into the consciousness aspect of the crop circle phenomenon. And when I stepped back, it was as if my not being there allowed the British government to repaint history, and to really recast history in a very false, untrue light. And by this, I really mean this, that Nick prepared a statement on behalf of the British government, as you will know, that he was and still is sworn to the Official Secrets Act,
yeah,
which means that anything that is said pertaining to his position or that of the British government on an official basis has to be cleared with his bosses. And when I read the official statement that said that the head of state, that is the Queen in Great Britain, and the Prime Minister, who was then Margaret Thatcher, had no interest. The British government themselves had no interest in the crop circle phenomena, and indeed, nor the UFO. That's a separate entity here. And that they were not involved in research of any kind. Well, I knew that to be untrue, because I was the person who was preparing, or initially certainly prepared, the first three or four reports, not only to the Queen, but to the Prime Minister's cabinet, for direct input into the cabinet discussions, and to the chief scientific advisor for the Queen and the Prime Minister. And so I knew that to be incorrect, and it was not only important that I re-establish the truth, if that were possible, because not only for my own reputation, I'm going out on this program now, and I have done on many others over the years, stating the opposite to the British government statement, that they were indeed, they had an interest. It reached a very high level in discussion in the British government and within the royalty. And so it was important just to, clear that up. And so I did say to Nick, I found him and, of course, followed it up with emails, that I was extremely disturbed, but that an inaccurate account of history had been written here. And whilst it was, I had no idea why that was, other than perhaps distancing from a subject they either knew a lot more about or were afraid to know too much more about, I didn't know the reasonings for it. But that I said to Nick, I really want you personally to do something about this. Not in a threatening way, but if it fails to happen, I'm going to do something about it. And what that doing something about it, unfortunately, was forced upon me, was the publication of Government Circles, the book you have referred to. And indeed, I also launched a website, which is still my current website, colinandrews.net, on the back of getting history to be written truthfully. So that's the background to the book. And I would say that whilst we're on this particular topic, important for me to say that I presented for the first time in public, outside of the book, that is, in front of Nick, that is, at the X Conference in Washington, D.C., 2 years ago. And I did that directly with Nick in the audience, and indeed he was presenting at the same venue for very good reason. I like Nick. He had and has a job to do. It raises many questions, but I felt it was incumbent upon me to have the confidence and to demonstrate that confidence in public, to place it right in front of him, right there, and in public. And that is what I did. And since that time, on an interview like this one, which followed actually within a couple of days, I wasn't anticipating it, but it came from BBC Radio, BBC World in Great Britain. They had Nick on air, and I was then, of course, back up here in Connecticut, where I now live. And I received a phone call from BBC in London asking, or telling me, they had Nick Pope on air, and would I be prepared to go on air and discuss this situation, which I did. I was only too pleased to do it. And Nick withdrew his statement, effectively that there's dotting I's and crossing T's with that statement. But he did admit that he had painted it not in a particularly accurate fashion, and that I had demonstrated by releasing documentation, letters and actual documentation from all of these senior people, including scientific advisor and many others, members of parliament, etc., to prove my point. So that was a long response, Henrik, to Government Circles, but it was important for me to say it, because to get, it can be misconstrued if I give you only a partial answer to what was behind it.
That's right, but it's a good opening, if you will, to the whole area, of course, because there's much to this topic. We have seen an interest from the various governments' points of view in the phenomena, although this is sometimes officially denied, sometimes not. But in the case of the royal family in England, the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, do you know if it's a personal interest, or is this just kind of how it's laid out because of how the paperwork is, that this is actually on behalf of the MOD or the Ministry of Defense, and it's their interest in this, but the royal family is kind of responsible for that, or they're ultimately the heads of this? Do you know?
It's a great question, and it's an important question, because the approach from the royal family, any member of the royal family, is almost always approached through their own PR people. It's never on a one-to-one.
Right.
I mean, I don't think even at government level it would ever come from Her Majesty the Queen to Barack Obama, would you attend a summit, etc., etc. It's always via their underlings, as it were, and not being disrespectful.
Sure.
And so therefore it always allows the safety net, the safe escape route of not associating the Queen directly with almost anything. I mean, that is the way that it operates, and therefore for Nick or you or I to say, well, that was a personal interest of the Queen, and I accept, actually, because of the letters I received from the Queen, that is true.
Yeah.
It was a personal interest, but to say that there was no involvement or no interest is inaccurate. And that was my only point with regard to the Queen. It actually has, and this is where I would need to be, I'm not a secretive person. I'm very much, I'm open. It's all on my sleeve. But there are areas here which I accept are delicate. And that has been not only said to me, you could say off camera, but I have received, and you might have this in your notes, I received, when I launched that website and that book, I had a phone call from a person I cannot name for legal reasons, and rather frankly was really quite ugly. It was here on the very phone I'm talking to you on right now, and telling me in no uncertain terms that one particular document must be removed immediately. And, it would cost me dearly not to do so. And this is the reasons for this are that there, that I think there are certain areas, certain subject matter, politically, and certainly in the paranormal areas that the royal family, a number of them, I've had, contact with a number of other members of the royal family too, that have, for very good reason, real interests, but they get very nervous when they get too close to being quoted personally.
Uh-huh,
and in my case, I had documentation with the particular member of the royal family, speaking to me and referring to particular events with an opinion, and there is where this all comes from, with a personal opinion. That's very sensitive when it comes to head of state involvement in British government affairs, because it is a complex system. She is a head of state, and yet on the day-to-day running of the government, while she does officially hold that position, we know that it comes down the road, and Westminster, their houses of parliament. So it's a complex situation. It's one that gets them very nervous, and as far as a threat was concerned, it's the only one that I've received directly involving that book, Government Circles. So that, again, that was a long, sorry, to make that clear, Henrik. You ask a very good question, and it is the response that Nick himself has given, that, well, yes, one can say the things that I've said and shown the documentation that I've shown, but this doesn't mean that there's a British government involvement, that this is a private interest of the Queen. That I will accept. I'm not going to challenge it. I think it does go further, and in fact at some levels I know it goes further, but I don't want to make that any more difficult for anybody than it need be. But it is not a true statement to say that also applies to the to the government of the day. I had direct correspondence involvement in government and in personal, in business time, myself, let alone my own Member of Parliament. And up the chain, it went to the Deputy Prime Minister and then up to the Prime Minister, involving our Chief Scientific Advisor. It went through advisory individuals, all of which I have been involved in. And so therefore, to say that the government were not involved and that everybody in the chain had a personal, you know, hobby interest, not true.
Yeah. So the documenting question, did you take that down? And also, how did you obtain the document to begin with?
Yeah, well, it was sent to me from the particular Member of Parliament.
Ah.
And it was removed. I regrettably, I could name the person. It would get me into a lot of trouble. So it's just isn't worth it. Nothing will come out of it other than, you know, an argument. It won't support any further our cause, you know, and our cause is the truth. And to get to the truth in our day, in the times in which we live, we need history to be accurate.
Yep.
And that was my only point in pursuing that. And hopefully Nick continues to be a friend. I think he does. We have interactions from time to time here and there in different places.
I want to ask you about this, because does this mean then that the Queen, on her personal request, actually got an erroneous report from the MOD on the crop circle phenomena?
No, it doesn't mean that.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that. I mean, let me just kind of go, I don't know whether this is giving you what you're looking for here, but there was one event that has involved all of the parties, from researchers right the way through to the scientific advisors to both the Queen and the British government. And that came out of Operation White Crow. Now, that was a series of paranormal kind of experiences that went on there, involved a number of witnesses, about a dozen. I don't have the details right in front of me, but around about a dozen. I was one of them. My first co-author, Pat Delgado, was there, and other individuals, including a member of the British Parliament, was there too. And things happened which were unexplained. They still remain unexplained. A report was prepared, not by me, I was present, but it was prepared by other individuals on the site and reported up to those people. And it was as a result of what happened and an opinion based upon what somebody at an advisory capacity thought might be happening in the experiences that we were having that particular night in 1989, that caused the strong request, let's put it nicely, it was a threat, but I'll put it that way, to remove documentation related directly to what we're talking about.
Interesting. I guess
so it wasn't erroneous. It was a direct report to the Queen and to the Prime Minister about events that took place. And what I got back was an opinion from a member of the royal family about what had happened.
Interesting. I just found this interesting tie-in here, because we had British UFO researcher Timothy Good with us a while back, and he mentioned on our program that Air Marshal Sir Peter Horsley allegedly had a meeting with an alien in Central London, and there was a communication between him and consequently Prince Charles, you know, as well. Prince Philip, actually, the Duke of Edinburgh. It's an interesting aspect to me, if it's true that the royal family are you know, involved and interested in you know, paranormal, you know, phenomena, and even UFOs and aliens as well, isn't it?
It's definite. I mean, outside of this particular research, it seems that my life, often or not, seems to put me in either the right place at the right time, or you might say the wrong place at the wrong time. But my work, you know, outside of crop circles and the research I've done, also took me very close to Lord Mountbatten. In fact, one of the areas I had significant responsibilities for was in the vicinity of his home and the estate where Prince Charles and Lady Diana held their honeymoon. It was almost a daily visit for me, was in that area there. And so I had an interest in what happened at Broadlands, which was the home of Lord Mountbatten, which was indeed a landing of a UFO some years back. I'm kind of conversant with that particular situation, but I'm also conversant with something that I've never referred to in detail. I don't feel too inclined to do so. I will give you, though, the flavor of something that supports very much what Timothy has spoken of. I did one of my presentations in Andover, in Hampshire, England, southern England, which was my home for many years. Mm. I was approached by a person at the end of the conference who not only had a pensive, worried look to their face, what I picked up from the body language was that this person was afraid, anxious about what it was they wanted to talk to me about. And I agreed to a private meeting, which was set up in the most bizarrely secretive fashion. But I still was inclined to go along with it because I sensed that this was not only a very intelligent person, that this person had something to tell me. And the long story short is that this was a person who had very close affiliations with almost all of the people you and I have just spoken about in the royal family, and who had personal knowledge of some of the experiences that had happened to them. There was no question over time. This went on for many weeks. I had a number of meetings with this person. At one of them, during one of them, a vehicle was outside with just about as many aerials as you've ever seen planted on a vehicle, with clearly a security vehicle for this person who was in, actually, I can say, in my family's home at that time. No longer now that exists, but I was being told things that were extraordinary involving Prince Charles, and it was primarily Prince Charles. I don't think I should go any further than that, but it would definitely confirm. I know, I'm sorry, that's very much a teaser. It confirms absolutely the kind of information that Timothy Goob was referring to. I don't know who does know exactly how all of this works, but an intelligence, there is clearly one intelligence involved that interacts, you know, with certain individuals, more some individuals than others. There's a knowing of position, of sincerity, of future role in humanity, and it isn't just a random. I'm sure that these are not random experiences that people are having. It's all on a timeline, going somewhere, from some place, going somewhere. And I don't think it's to our plan. You know, this is somebody else's plan. We just happen to be here involved in some of it. So that's kind of jumping off at a tangent, but it's very interesting.
It sure is. I mean, we kind of jumped, obviously, from the crop circle phenomena, if you will, over to the area of UFOs and aliens. And the question that I did want to get to, and I think this is a good time to ask it then, is, If it's wise to connect the two. There are certain aspects, obviously, that or certain researchers that are convinced that the two are married, of course, the UFO phenomena and the crop circle phenomena. Are you inclined to be of the same persuasion as well, Colin?
I would have to be honest to say, yes, I am. I've not made it particularly obvious in the early parts of my research. And it was more going on instinct, on personal experiences that we would have. I tell you, I mean, honestly and frankly, the very first moment I saw a crop circle, that was 1983, the very first thing that, you know, and I come from the sciences, I'm an engineer myself, and I'm looking at swirl plants flattened to the ground, no tracks in or out, The plants were still moving. I could hear them clicking as I walked up to them. And so the very first impression was something has just done this. And it's circular, it's spiraled. There's a symmetry to the veining structure of the plants themselves. And I would have to admit that one of the things that crossed my mind at that time was, could this possibly be a spinning object from above? So it kind of came in as a possibility, but as the data was gathered, as the reports, you know, were kind of put into the database, you know, one saw that there had to be a door open for that possibility. But where it started to firm up as an intelligence, and I would say a mind, rather than an extraterrestrial, and this is where I would perhaps differentiate a little bit between where I'm coming from and the statement that you made. Mm. And that would be here, that whilst this is now further matured, and I'd like very much if we could talk, obviously sometime during our discussion about where where we end up with all this, yep. What does it all mean?
Yeah.
Where it started to definitely ring a bell of or tug the chain that this is something that knows what it's doing was when we would make comments to one another, like in the research days, you know, of the small team that started all this, you know, Terence Meaden, Pat Delgado, Busty Taylor and myself, very small group, very small team, working with one another, and that's all there was to it. We had farming community that we were getting to know as time went on through television and radio. That became a wider field, and it went out into other countries ultimately. But we were having experiences that we would just simply look at one another and say, well, my God, what a strange coincidence. What a strange synchronistic event has just taken place. And I'll give you a couple of examples. Pat Delgado and myself were walking away from a circle with two rings, which was 1986, and we were just discussing, you know, the pure science of it. You know, what did we know, what didn't we know, the plant analysis so far and all these things. And what we had noticed was that when we had a circle that was spiraled clockwise, if it came with a single ring, which it began to happen at around that period, that first ring around the circle would be counterclockwise. And then if it came with two, which again it did in 86, that would be counter to the first ring. The second would be now clockwise. And so this complied with the law of angular momentum, you know, a law of physics that we work with, scientists work with. Mm. It's a known, it's accepted, it's what nature does. It keeps things in equilibrium, in balance. Well, it was the very next day, in the very next field to where we spoke, now this is where the kind of strange coincidence, was absolutely something that didn't comply with that. And it was like, well, how bizarre is that? You've got a global phenomena which counters a result of the research so far, or a conclusion, you might say, an observation, not just anywhere, but in the very field next to where we were stood. And this happened many times, those kind of interactive, like ghost-like, somebody looking over your shoulder, reactions to things that we were discovering or speaking about. Mm. And so it looked from very early on as if that at some level there was interaction taking place, that there was reaction to what we were speaking about. So that might be just where I, you know, where I would not be prepared to go just openly to say, well, extraterrestrial and crop circles all on the same page. I think this will encompass a lot of the paranormal subjects when we ultimately find out more about, you know, the connections.
If we project things in the proper way, if you will, this seems to be able to manifest itself onto the ground. Tell us a story that you have about the women meditating and that story. Give us that, Colin.
Sure, Henrik. Well, you know, it kind of this interaction or kind of a forewarning, I guess, of what was to come began really back in the 80s when we would notice that the small research team that we would say something to one another, and just as if somebody was on our shoulders listening, aspects of that conversation would then manifest in the fields very close by within hours of us speaking. We took that initially as pure coincidence, but it manifested itself, it showed itself, not just through us, but through other people over the years in really quite extraordinary ways, and in ways that it would be hard to imagine were pure coincidence. And with regard to this very odd occurrence that took place with some women that were meditating. Well, this was, I believe it was in the late 90s. I don't have the date on the top of my head, but fully researched. And in fact, I was very, very much involved in the investigation into this to check out the facts at that time. And what happened was that there was a group of women, about a dozen of them, I believe 11 of them, and they had no fixed plan on precisely what they would do in this meditation. There was a loose arrangement that they would go out with one another on this particular summer evening, and they would find a comfortable place that they felt comfortable with, and would do a meditation. That's all there was as far as a plan was concerned. But so they headed out, and they actually drove up a place called the Avenue. This is a very small country lane, kind of a very small minor highway, in Wiltshire, England, towards and very close to Avebury, a very famous archaeological site there. And they saw a field on the right and some trees about 200, 300 yards away off that little road. So they parked up and they headed up. They kind of put their blankets down and made themselves comfortable in between and under these trees and started a meditation. Out of that meditation, this is something that I've become now quite familiar with, and I keep hearing this, is that during the meditation, they each of them arrived with a design in their heads, which was in fact the same design. And on this occasion, it was a very small, in scale, flower of life, a flower design. And they meditated on it, and they projected in their minds that they would want this to appear close to them. That was it, until we now know, and didn't at that time, know that at just after 10:15 that same evening, Matthew Williams, who is known to the research fraternity as a person who has made crop circles, and he was watching television. He lived alone and was watching the television and had what he describes as a sudden, out of nowhere urge, a feeling, a strong feeling, about a pattern that he had in his head to go and make it. Well, he was alone, and he first sat down and worked out how he would make it alone, and he too got into his car, headed out, found himself driving up the avenue, this same road as the woman had done hours before. He saw a field on his right. I think it was one of the only fields left with cereal crops in at that time. This was late in the cereal growing year. He parked his vehicle up, walked up into the field, and it's a longer story than this, actually, but the pieces that matter for our conversation was that there was a temperature drop. He noted this. It was a very rapid temperature drop. He said he did a kind of a process, it's kind of a spiritual, you could say, prayer of kinds, mm-hmm. and to protect himself, and the things that he apparently does each time that he makes one of these crop circles. Anyway, he went into the field, he constructed a design, and he left, but he had heard voices in this field, which we now know were the voices of the women still up underneath the tree, less than 100 yards away from him. He made it his business over the coming days to try and find out who they were and what was happening up there. It was very close to where he was making this circle. Well, with the help of the local farmer and the number of people that whose gardens backed onto this area, it was discovered ultimately who this was. And Matthew Williams sought them out, he found them, and he spoke to the woman. I say them, he found the leader of the group. The others had dispersed. I think some had returned to the States by then. But he spoke to the woman who had led the meditation and asked if it was her and them in that field. And she said, yes, it was. And she said, let me tell you something. We were meditating on a design. She described it. And she said, it arrived that night in that field. And Matthew said, yes, and I made it. So this for us, or for me particularly, after spending the last now 12 years very specifically or looking at the consciousness aspect of this, was one of the first that kind, you could say, closed the loop, that connected two sections of this thinking together, two parts of this thinking. In other words, one part of this is the transmission of a design and a process of manufacture transmitted. The other is from another segment of the research, you could say broadly, the crop circle spectrum, people making some of them. And this guy received an urge to do something that was part of somebody else's transmission. So it really closed the loop. You could say it went full circle. And so that, I think, is one of, it's not alone. There are actually quite a few similar experiences to that that I can relay, that I've studied and verified. So, but I think that's an important one, because the odds of that happening, you know, you're involving here 13 people, you're involving one single design, you're involving in this formula the same field at the same time on the same night in the same country. Now the odds of all these things stacking up and occurring, you could say, according to plan, according to the meditation request, are startling. I mean, it's like winning the lotto, you know, each day for a week. I mean, it's quite beyond the bounds. And the only way I could see that one could settle that out and be satisfied with another explanation other than paranormal of a kind would be a deception. In other words, the people concerned with the meditation did in fact not meditate until they knew the design was there, or that Matthew Williams was aware that the design was there and then put himself forward as being the manufacturer of it, knowing about the meditation. I don't believe either of those things happened, because for the last, as I say, well, certainly half of my research into this is now nearly 30 years, we pick up on this constantly. I've had my own experiences. So, you know, you kind of come from that place, Henrik, which I think we would both agree, and many watching or listening to this program will agree, that, you know, we can speculate about many things, and we can share our views and our thoughts, but the one thing that we all gravitate towards is a personal experience. You know, you don't need to be convinced personally if you've had the experience. You kind of put yourself forward as the salesman in a way, because you know something happened to you. And I can assure you, I've had personal experiences which I don't need to convince anybody about.
Yeah.
So it's a long, I'm sorry, that was a very long kind of discussion point, but that's what happened on that night with regard to those women meditating.
How can it be, do you think, interactive like this, and how does it work? And furthermore, does it say anything about the phenomena, the nature of it?
I think it says, it's a great question. I think it says much more about us and the nature of humanity. I think that I feel very privileged. I've had a rough ride with some of the research community ever since, you know, I've basically just put forward a truth about the level of hoaxing. But all of that said and done, I still feel privileged, honored and privileged to have watched a brand new mystery unfold in the hands of humanity. And what I've seen has been patterns that appear mysteriously, the human hand become involved, the intelligence community getting involved, governments at the and the rest of them also dabbling and wanting to know precisely more about it. But the great thing of value here is what is now beginning to come into focus, which is very much related to what we've just discussed, and that is, precisely your question, is to how does this work? What does this mean? Is this what the subject itself has been trying to offer, and we've simply just woken up to it? And of course, I am no different to anybody else in having definitive answers. I'm probably better equipped than most people to have a view because I've been directly involved in a hands-on way. You know, I'm not sat in an office. I resigned my whole-time job many years ago to look at this full-time. And, you know, I've thrown a lot of resources at it, and other people have too. So what I see is happening is the interaction is unquestionably very much at the center of this, and in fathoming out how and why it's happening is going to be phase two of this research. I don't know how much a phase two will be in my hands, but this is where it's going. I to be very specific in trying to answer a very difficult question, actually. Certainly it cannot be definitive, but I believe that the function of the mind, the human mind, that is with the motor neurons and the subset of motor neurons, which is basically mirror neurons as they're called, this is a function of the mind, of intelligence, that connects not just the necessary circuitry of the human brain for the individual concerned, but it connects simultaneously, and many believe instantaneously, with the mind function of other people. Now, that really means that if you can try and imagine right now that in front of me, as I'm talking to you, I have a cup of coffee, which is a great thing to have during a discussion like this. And so I am now putting my right hand out to pick up that cup of coffee. Now, in me so doing, and me, because you cannot see what I'm doing, but I'm describing to you what I'm doing, you now have mirror neurons that are giving you an auto feedback, you could say a visual reality of what I am actually doing. The only thing that separates you and I, your listeners, right now, to what is happening here in Connecticut, are the touch sensors in my skin. And so when I touch the handle of my cup, the only thing that separates all of us from that operation is my skin. Because the mirror neurons, that mirror, the motor neurons, which are those parts, those circuits that need to tell my right hand to go and do what I'm telling it to do, that whole process is being shared by all of us. And this is now provable. I mean, this is work that's going on in California, University of California, at Berkeley, and in other places. And they can watch this happening. And in fact, it has reached a point where if you ask me a question, as you are, part of you, your operation, your mirror neurons, actually know what I'm going to say 6 seconds ahead of when I say it. So there is no doubt we are already moving into a super period of knowledge, knowing that we are all connected. And the function of meditation, which we've just talked about in this one, and it is only one of many things that are going on around the crop circle scene, is just a piece of supportive evidence that indeed we are all connected. And so it is developing that knowledge, developing by experimentation. The advantages that we can take out of this, and so that we can develop our consciousness in a deliberate fashion, much more based upon the emotions of love and respect, for example, than the period that we regrettably, well, thankfully, are leaving, but regrettably we have lived, you and I, in a period of time which has been far from perfect. We would not have the extraordinary problems in our world today had we understood and functioned with the emotions, which are electrochemical reactions inside of our body. Those functions and those emotions related to respect and to love. So it might sound like I'm saying many different things, but I'm trying to say that I'm saying the same thing. It is all the same thing, and it's understanding the human mind, the power of who we are, and moving forward with that knowledge. And I guess it's best summed up by saying that we have to return to a position of having faith. Now, this is it can be a very delicate subject, but I'm not going to take it there. I mean, what I'm saying, faith, I'm saying faith in ourselves, is that it is not necessary, in my opinion, and I'll take this responsibility of saying this, it is not necessary to extend faith. It is a choice, of course, and we all respect that, is to project that faith outside of oneself. We are here on planet Earth with a tremendous responsibility because we are, you could say, the mastermind. We are the people, we are the life force that's changing this planet, and therefore we have the responsibility of all that we are changing. And all that we are changing so far has been disgraceful, frankly, and there's no other way of putting it, with a lack of respect. So, anyway, that's come a long way from the study of crop circles, but it's all in here because that's truly what I think this is all about. They started by a single circle, and it evolved quickly to, like, from A to B to C, and through the alphabet, we began to see patterns evolving. Then we had the challenge of people making them and forcing, you might say, the best from the research fraternity. And it's all okay to make a statement that it's real and it's this or it means that. But we better be right. If it's important what's happening here, we have to be right and we have to be honest. And so this process is ongoing. It's a very big subject. It's bigger and more important than pretty well anybody in the general media have given it. I've done many documentaries myself over many years. There are few like yourself, Henrik, who give it the space that it deserves, have the discussion points, be critical. You know, we can challenge one another's thinking. Mm. It is not a bad thing. I'm not personally at war or have enemies. They make themselves enemies if they are enemies to me from the crop circle making community or the crop circle research community. Mm. If we have a phenomenon which is setting itself as an example to learn from, then we have to set the example. And it is no good at being at war with one another and just joining the club with every other community on our planet, it seems. You know, whether you're looking at religion or whether you're looking at industry, business, you know, you name it. And they all seem to be at loggerheads with one another.
Yeah, that's right.
So again, a long soundbite, and I apologize for that.
No, but no need.
It runs together.
Well, that's right. That's right. And no need for that, Colin. We want to get your answers, and we want to give it the time to go into it in detail as well. And obviously, this what you have gone into here opens up our discussion. Obviously, for the next segment, we're going to take a break here in a few minutes here. But I want to give the floor to you and a chance to not only mention the books and the DVDs that you have out there, but also some of the upcoming events you know, during this the year of anticipation, if I can call it that, Colin, 2012. You even have a book, obviously, on the subject as well, The Complete Idiot's Guide to 2012. Like that title, by the way.
But yeah,
why don't you, first of all, tell us about your books. And obviously, people can find more at colinandrews.net. There's where you have all your research and books and titles and everything. But mention a few of your titles and then get into the events that you have upcoming this year, Colin.
Oh, thanks, Henrik. Well, the more current books are the ones that I'm sure people would be interested in. The others have basically done their job, I think. They're always available. But the more current ones, Government Circles, had to be written, and it was one I didn't plan to, but I felt at the end had to be written to put the record straight about the British government and royalty involvement in the subject. Yeah. And so that book is pretty well full of documentation and evidence of the level at which they were involved, and I was involved with them. So that's Government Circles. The Andrews catalogue is very new, and this really speaks to the individual designs. Many hundreds of them are shown and spoken to with some detail. Some of the interaction that we've discussed is also in that book. It's a very easy book to read. It was, of course, designed that way. The Assessment, again, is a book that has just come out and was not planned to be written, but I felt, again, that coming from my archives, which is really very, they're very, very extensive, I thought it was necessary to do this because we've had this debate over so many years now about the proportion that are man-made opposed to those that are not. And so The Assessment goes into how the evaluation was done. The Complete Idiot's Guide series of books, there are a whole series of books by that title. There are two that I have co-authored with my wife, Cynthia. The Complete Idiot's Guide to 2012, it's very much an overview of the subject. It took 6 months of solid research with the Mayan elders and the council of the Mayan elders down there in Guatemala. We had discussions with people at NASA and many other experts in their fields, and to evaluate just what 2012, the prophecy, was about. I think it's a very valuable book. It's doing very well still. It was written 2 years ago, but it's the content and the threads that ran through and we suggested were going to take place as a result of the prophecy have taken place. And it's a very interesting read from that position alone. We also co-authored with my wife The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Akashic Record. An Akashic Record really can be substituted by the term consciousness. So those are really the current books. Mm-hmm. And three events that are coming up, which I think are probably, they stand alone as important in their own right. This year, February 21, 26, is the International UFO Congress at Scottsdale in Arizona. I'll be down there to speak on the conscious and interactive facet of this subject. April 28th and 29th is the first of its kind, fully in-depth and interactive lectures and workshops, which I'm doing with my wife again. That will be held at the Fellowship of the Spirit Learning Center in New York State in the U.S. That's a whole weekend and on a one-to-one. We're very much looking forward to it. It is also available via the internet, streaming internet live connections. So that's all on my website. And the last one, December 15, 22, is absolutely unique. It's going back to where all this began. I'll be going down there to Chichen Itza, the pyramid there. Mm-hmm. That's going to be quite an event. That's with Power Place Tours, with Greg Braden, the Mayan elder, Humbertsman, Robert Bavall, and Marcia Shimoff, Cynthia, and I. And that's really, that's this year's key events.
Well, there you go. And so that means for the shift over, if you will, and right there at the winter solstice, you'll be in Chichen Itza at the pyramids right there. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Wow, there you go.
We will be there. The government down there have given us permission to go in and on the pyramid. So we're going to be there at the very date that was considered to be so important, 21 December 2012.
Wow, there we go. And as you said, Colin, all the information here, the links are right there on the website, colinandrews.net. Just scroll down and you see all the three events there, and underneath you have a link, and then obviously all the titles that you mentioned are right there and linked up to amazon.com as well. And then the book, obviously, that we primarily in this first hour have been talking about is Government Circles, but then there's a lot more to it. Colin is a legend in the field, if you will. You even came up with the term crop circle back in the day, so that's really shows a little bit of how influential you and your work obviously has been in all this. But again, website colinandrews.net. We'll take a short break here and then we'll continue with more. So stay with us, Colin. We'll be right back with more. Second hour, Colin answers the question of why so many circles have been showing up in southern England. With dowsing and other techniques, it might be provable that geography is at the heart of the phenomena. Huge aquifers with lots of moving water builds up energy, and shock stone functions as a conduit for human consciousness. This could also be an explanation of why ancient cultures built megaliths in the same area, and why they have been viewed as sacred ever since. We discuss how the UFO field is connected to crop circles, and Colin argues that humanity is being awakened to a greater reality with aid of symbols, geometry, and a mystery that is beyond our current level of understanding. Colin also shares a fascinating story of a download that he and his wife received one night in 91. It was describing where and how the circles were about to be placed in a triangular pattern in relationship to Stonehenge. Later, Andrews discussed the stupid majority and how most people actually are afraid of crop circles, and how a few consequently now are ruining the communication by creating their own patterns and circles, muddying the water of sorts, making it more difficult to track the genuine communication of the real ones. Colin also shares what he sees coming this year and the details of the Finger of God alignment. Don't miss this interesting continuation with Colin Andrews. Go to redicecreations.com and log in if you're a member. If you're not, consider signing up for membership. You'll love it. We have so much in our members area. It's simple and it's easy. All the information is on the website. Next up on Red Eyes Radio, we have Mac Maloney on UFOs in wartime. Then Troy McLaughlin on the Saturn Death Cult, a very interesting two-part program. We also have Carl Munk, Jeff Hilling, Anthony Peake, Bob Frisell, Asharia S., Mark Passio, Dr. Robert Verkirk, Joseph Atfield, Sonia Barrett, and Robert Bovall coming on the program after that. We'll be back with more in just a few days. You're, of course, welcome to tune in then. But coming up next now is Hour 2 with Colin Andrews, Crop Circle Messages and 2012. Stay tuned.